thing in Perek Beis Pasuk Yud Dalid. The last thing we learned was the Torah says you can't bring any yeast, any dough, any honey, I mean, and every korban needs to have salt on it. We discussed why, because salt came with a complaint when Hashem made the rakia, the heaven that splits the higher and lower. Okay, so the lower waters came and complained, so Hashem said, you know what? The water I'll use to pour water on the Mizbeach and Simchas Beis HaShoev and Sukkis, and the salt will be the concept of the korban. Okay, that's what we're up to. So now it says like this, Imtakriv Minchas Bikurim LaHashem, if you will bring a meal offering of the first grain to Hashem. Now this is again not an animal, this is what's called the korban Eimer. As Rashi explains, that this refers to the korban Eimer, and even though the Torah over here says the expression Ve'im Takriv, if you will bring, which by a donated korban it makes sense, you know, if you will bring, then the law is this and this. This is a mandatory korban. But the Rashi quotes, there's three places in Chumash that obligatory. Even though the Torah uses the word im, it doesn't mean if, it means when. In other words, because of the Rashi says, Rashi quotes here the other pasukim, im yi a yovel. It says, if yovel, the Jubilee year will be. The Jubilee is going to be year, regardless. So the im over there means when. Or like in Parshas Mishpatim we learned, it says, im kesef talve, if you lend money. It doesn't mean if, because you have to mitzvah to lend. It means when you lend money. So here he's speaking about the korban eimer. Now the korban eimer is relevant to these days, because it's sfiras ha'eimer. The Torah says, in a different place, that, v'zvartam lachem mimachas ha'shabbos, miyam aviyach ha'seim ha'tenufam. On the second day of Pesach, they brought the korban eimer. Now the korban eimer was made out of barley. Even though all flour offerings had to be made from wheat, because wheat is better than barley, nevertheless, one of the few exceptions was the minchas eimer, which was barley. Well, we'll soon see. The Torah is going to tell us what to do with it. There's another flour offering. These are the only two flour offerings which are brought from barley. One is the Omer, and the other one is Saita. But that's why there's a custom of learning the Gemara Saita between Pesach and Shavuos. What's the connection between Saita and Omer? It says back that there's 49 pages in the Gemara. But also it says, other exception is that Saita brings the carbon Eimer also of barley. The Saita, Mincha Saita, is also from barley.
Saita for the trial of the adulterous
wife? Right, right.
Because she acted like a
behavior. Oh, so the Gemara says, why does she bring out of barley, which is Michael Behema? The Gemara says, Sa'edim, Amichita is Michael Adam. Wheat is the food of people. Sa'edim, barley is the food of animals. That's what the Gemara says. So by Eimer it says, because she acted like an animal, so therefore her carbon has to be also from an animal. It's exerts a kosov.
When the Omer, when they first got taken out and then were going to get the Torah,
right,
counting the Omer, there was no barley offering, right?
Well, there was, when they brought the carbon Omer, well,
the very first time,
there's no carbon Omer yet.
Okay, so how do we get from the very first time to the barley offering?
No, there's two different things.
Days without anything.
Correct.
So how do we get from there to bringing barley?
No, there's a separate mitzvah. The Torah says, when you bring the minchas bikurim, you have to bring it out of barley. And this is what the Torah is going to tell us what to do with it. From that day is when you started counting the Omer. 49 days until you come to Shavuos.
But we were counting without any barley. We were counting without nothing.
Correct. But over there, the Medrash says, the Ran brings down that the original Sfiras HaEmer came about. He says, Isa Ba'agada, it's the round at the end of Pesachim. Says, Isa Ba'agada is a medrash that says that when the Jews left Egypt and they were told that 49 days later they're going to get the Torah, they were so excited they started counting the days. But as a rule, the counting of the Omer had nothing to do with the Korban Omer per se. It's just that the Torah says, when you bring the Korban Omer, which was on the second day of Pesach, from that day you count Sheva Shabbos is Tumim Mestiyana. You count 49 days and in our calendar, the 50th day of Shavuos.
Oh, my question was, why did we learn
Sotah
on this time?
Oh, why do you learn Sotah? Because the carbon emo is barley, and Sotah brought a barley, and it's all, in a spiritual sense, the mincha of an emer, right, was to elevate the object to holiness. All the carbonists were to elevate the physical existence to spirituality. So, when a woman acted like a behemoth, then you needed to elevate that animal, physical animal aspect, to the base of Midrash. So even the flour offering was made out of animal food. The Etzaita anyway should have been embarrassed. I mean, she did what she wasn't supposed to do. Or, yeah, she had to bring it.
Why she had to bring a korban if she wasn't guilty?
Because regardless, it says if the husband accuses her of committing adultery, this is the process. She has to drink the water. She might be innocent. It says, in fact, the Gemara uses the expression that you tell a Saita, you know, it's like putting poison on a piece of skin. If the skin is healthy, nothing's going to happen to it. If it's hurt, then it's going to burn. So you tell the Seder, listen, this water is not making you guilty. If you're innocent, you'll be blessed. If you're guilty, you're going to die. So you tell them, you have nothing to worry about, because if you're innocent, nothing's going to happen to you. If you're guilty, admit your guilt, because you're guilty.
No, but the Gemara says that she brings korban because she acted like an animal.
Right, that's the assumption that she did.
That's the assumption.
The assumption that she acted like an animal. In this case, because Saita is not stam, doesn't say, oh, you committed adultery. That's not the way Saita works. Saita works, the husband warned her, and not to talk to this guy, not to be alone with this guy, and she went and did it anyway. So as Gemara uses the expression, raglayim ladavar, meaning there's feet to it, meaning there's an air of guilt over here. It smells guilty. Samagaya comes up to his wife and says, hey, you committed adultery. She doesn't bring Saita things. She doesn't drink the water. It's only when the husband warned her, Al-Tidabri Mishplaini, Al-Tistri Mishplaini, and not only she spoke to the guy, she went and was home alone with the guy, or in a private place, the amount of time it takes to have relations, so then...
55 seconds?
And there were witnesses.
What you said?
No, no, not witnesses. If there are witnesses, then she's guilty. If there's witnesses that they committed adultery, they're guilty. There are no witnesses.
No, that they were alone.
Right. So that's the Gemara discussion. If by how many people have to warn her in first mission, say this guy, how many people have to warn her in front of, and how many people on the actual
specific guy?
Yeah, he doesn't say don't speak with anybody. He says, don't. In other words, the husband is fearful.
He suspects.
He suspects about a particular guy. And he says to her, I don't want you being alone with this guy. And then she goes on and bees, and is alone with this guy. So she's acting like an animal already. In other words, even though nothing happened, but she's still acting like an animal. So therefore she brings, okay, but let's see about the carbon emer. 552.
Say, I want to get.
Who?
Say,
because in the olden times,
it was forcibly.
A husband was able to throw a get at his wife, and she was divorced. Until Rabbeinu Gershom came along and stopped it. He said, you can't divorce your wife against her will. She needs to agree to accept the get. Okay, but let's continue over here. Okay, so he says, when you bring on the second day of Pesach this offering of, now this Korban Emor, by the way, why is it called Bikurim, the first fruits? Because this Korban, this flour offering, allowed the new grain from the year to be eaten. That means in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, until the Korban Emor was brought, none of the new grain was allowed to be eaten. This permitted the new grain to be eaten. And therefore it was from grain, not from animals. It had to be a minchas emer, because it had to permit the new grain to be eaten. Then when the Gemara said when there was no Beis HaMikdash, the second day of Pesach itself permitted it. Even if there's no carbon omer because there's no Beis HaMikdash, the day itself permitted it. That's the whole question, like we were learning before, does it apply today or not? What's called in today's world, do you keep Yashan, Chadash? What's Chadash or Yashan? Chadash means the new grain. Now, if you can't eat the new grain until the second day of Pesach, so any food which was made with the new grain before that day, you're not allowed to eat.
When they will harvest the new grain?
Huh?
What time of the year?
Officially, Chaga Kotzer was...
Shavuot.
Shavuot is Chaga Kotzer. But it doesn't matter. The grain came before. Kotzer was in the fruits. They had actually before Pesach, they had the grain that grew during the winter or spring. So until they had the new, that's why when you keep what's called you keep Yashan, it means you don't use any of the new crop that grows from a certain time until the second day of Pesach comes. That's what the halach is. So then, that permits you, or in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Minchas Emer permitted you to eat the new grain. So here the Torah is going to tell us what's the process. So it says like this. Aviv, it has to be ripe ears, kolei ba'esh, parched over fire, gadis karmel, ground from plump kernels. To make the flour, it has to be plump kernels that you ground of barley. Takriv eis minchas bikurecha, this is the meal offering for the first grain, in other words, for what's called chodesh. So in other words, like this, it had to be barley, it had to be, as Rashi says, it was parched lightly. Why did you need to parch the grains? It was the new grains, they were still fresh, right? When they're wet, they're very hard to grind. When they're dry, they're much easier to grind. So that's the simple reason, so to speak, what the Torah says. You have to parch them lightly over a fire to dry them. Then you grind them up. And it has to be gadis karmel. It's flour milled, like he says, in the process of making groats from freshly cut soft moist kernels. The grain is broken into coarse pieces. And then after the sifting, the fine flour comes down and the thick courses stay, you know, on top. And that's why the fine flour of barley was used for the carbon emir. That was the way it had to be done. What do you learn? Huh?
In today's contemporary life, what do we learn
from that?
What can you learn? I didn't give it much thought, but I can tell you what just fell into my head. There are many people that in religion separate shul from business. In other words, many people say that religion you practice in shul. In shul you daven, in shul you learn. But in the outside world, let's leave religion out of business. You know, I gotta make a buck, right? I don't want to keep religion getting in my way of making a buck. Okay, making money. So therefore, let's keep religion in the shul, not in the business.
Pre-war Germany.
Like many people, people separated because Lahavdil, in other religions, most religions you practice in a church. That's the whole practice of religion. You're not restricted at home what you do and what you eat. And yeah, there are common laws, you know, don't steal, don't commit adultery, you know. But as far as your life should be permeated with religion, that you don't have by most religions. Yiddishkeit is something that Hashem says like this. Even your barley, which refers to your animal instincts, your animal food, like we said, the barley is Meichel Behema, the Gemara says, even in the animal things, you need to take the finest of it and bring it as a sacrifice to God. Okay? It says, Kol Chelev LaHashem, all the best should be given to Hashem. The fats, meaning the best, the prime, should be given to Hashem. That's why, again, an interesting thing. Many schools, day schools, right? The half of the Hebrew, half of the English. Yeah? So many schools, sometimes because of the shortage of teachers, would teach secular studies in the morning and Hebrew studies in the afternoon. Because they just switched teachers around. They didn't have enough teachers. So some kids learned Hebrew in the morning and then English in the afternoon. Or some kid at the place did English in the morning and Hebrew in the afternoon. The Rebbe was very emphatic. The Rebbe spoke many times that in the morning you have to learn the Mudei Kodesh, the holy stuff. Why? In the morning, kids are more awake. They're not tired yet from the whole day. You want to give the prime the best. You have to give it to Hashem in the morning. Right? A Jew gets up in the morning, you daven right away. The first thing you do, you give to Hashem. Here it says that even the Korban Omer, which is from barley, which symbolizes not the holy things in life, the animalistic things in life, that also should be given as a Korban to Hashem. Not all of it, because as we learned before by the flour offerings, what does Hashem say? You have to bring a big amount of flour, right? Whatever types we learned before. The Kohen takes a handful, right? Brushes off the thumb, brushes off the bottom finger. So all you're bringing on the Mizbeach is 3 fingers worth of barley from a large amount. Correct? As we'll soon see here also. So the question is, if Hashem only wants a handful, bring a handful of flour. Hashem says, no, you bring a lot of flour. From the flour, what are you going to burn on the altar, on the Mizbeach, only 1 handful, and then the rest, the Kohen and meat. So why? And the same thing you find by a lot of mitzvahs. Even the mitzvah tzedakah. The mitzvah tzedakah is 10%. Right? If you think about it, it should be reverse. 90% should belong to Hashem. He gives us our life, He gives us our health, He gives us the job. Everything comes from Hashem. Yeah? So if you think about it, Hashem should say, you know what? All of it belongs to me. 10% you can keep for yourself. Hashem doesn't say that. Hashem says, listen, 90% you keep. 10% I want you to give me. But it should be from the good. You know. What does Hashem say over here? Even in your animal thing, I don't want all of it. But give me some of it. Just keep in mind that there is godliness even in the Omer, even in the animal things of life also. And that's the transformation of evil to Kedusha. Animal things, you know, the worldly things which are called animalistic are all called a given to Hashem. Okay, next starts a very interesting Karban, which is called Karban Shlomim. Until now, we were learning basically about Karban Ola, the burnt offering which is completely burnt on the Mizbeach. So it says now like this, Vim Zevach Shlomim Karbanei, what happens if a person's offering is a feast, peace offering, and this is the question, because what does the word Zevach mean? And there are different interpretations of what the word Zevach means. Rashi doesn't mention it, but other Mefarshim learn that the word Zevach, literally, zevach means shechting, slaughtering. So it says, if you're shechting a carbon of shlamim, this and this is the carbon. Other mefarshim learn that, like Rashi says, it means a feast. They bring down zevach mishpacha, a feast of the family. There's a lot of words that the word zevach means feast. Therefore, what does it mean? This is a feast. The carbon shlamim was a feast. It wasn't only the shechta, the Karban Shlomim. Because as we'll soon learn in detail, the Karban Shlomim was unique. Why is it called Shlomim? Shlomim literally means peace. Shalom. Okay? Shalom also comes from the word Shlomim. The Mefarshim explain over here is Shleimut, completeness. It means peace, it means completeness. Both are right, by the way. And they're interconnected. What was the uniqueness of a Karban Shlomim? Everybody was happy. The Karban Ola, only the Mizbeach got everything. The person ate nothing. Certain Karbanis, the Mizbeach ate, meaning God ate, and the Kohanim ate. The one Karban that everybody was happy was the Karban Shlomim. Why? God got a part, the Kohanim got a part, and the owner got a part of the animal. So everybody was happy. So it says in the Gemara that what happened when somebody brought a Karban Shlomim, they would call all their friends together and they'd have a feast to eat the Karban that they just brought as a korban to Hashem. So therefore, over here, the Mefarshim explained, that's why the Torah uses the word zevach shlamim, does not only mean to slaughter it, but it means actually a feast, because it was taka feast that he invited his family and friends to enjoy. No, the guy brought it.
The guy brought it. I thought he said only the owner would eat it.
No. He said he was not only the owner.
No,
but if you look in the Siddur, yeah. Shlomim kachim kalim, what we say in the Zalmakim, right? At the lesser levels of carbon. Shchitasim b'chol makom ba'azara. You can check that anywhere in the Azara. Some things we learned before, shchitasim batzofen, that the shechted on the northern part of the Mishkan of Beis HaMikdash. This was shchitasim, as the pasuk is going to say soon. You could shecht it anywhere. Okay, v'necholim b'chol ha'ir, you could eat it anywhere in Yerushalayim, l'chol adam, for any person. B'chol ma'echol, with any food, l'shnei yamim v'layla echad, for 2 days and one night. So if you brought it, let's say Monday, you're allowed to eat the carbon shlomim Monday night and Tuesday. By sundown, you have to be finished.
How did they enforce the fact that it wouldn't be
eaten after
that time? Like anything else. You take it out, you got it, it's in your house, you put it in your refrigerator.
No, because it says that then it becomes nice, you have to burn it.
Okay.
Any meat of any carbon left after the allotted time of eating, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to burn it. But neisar, by ishtes reifu, you have to burn it. Listen, if a guy's mechal Shabbos and he cooks and he eats the food, well, who's going to enforce it?
Right.
I mean, either you do it or you don't do it.
Totally voluntary?
Yeah. Yes. It was a donation. There was no... Now, on Yom Tif, they had an obligation to bring a carbon shlomim. That's why Legulam by the Pesach said you have Beit Zeraya and Beitza. The Zeraya was for the carbon Pesach, and the egg is for the carbon shlomim that they used to bring. That was a mandatory carbon. But Stam, a guy wanted to donate the carbon shlomim, it was completely optional. Now, the Mefarshim explain, what is the piece over here? The piece is between, and it's a very unique concept. If you think about it, God eats, and the people eat. And this is called peace. Normally, there is a contradiction and a fight between spirituality and physical. Like we know, spiritual and physical don't get along very well. Once Hashem gave the Torah, and this is the whole concept of a carbon shlomim on a more personal level, so to speak, Torah, as Gemara uses the expression, the whole Torah was given lases sholem ba'olam, to make peace in the world. Okay? The Gemara, the Medrash says that when Hashem gave the Torah on Har Sinai, there was a commotion in heaven, you know, the Lekeilus of Rakim, there's a whole commotion going on earth, not in heaven. And everybody ran to Bilam. He was the Goyesh Rebbe at that time. They went to Navi of the Goyim. They ran to Bilam. And they asked Bilam what's going on with this commotion. They got scared. They thought maybe another flood, another problems in Egypt. So Bilam, this is what the Medrash says. Bilam answered them a pasuk in Tehillim that we say every Friday night. Hashem oz la'amo yitain. Hashem yivarech asam v'asholim. In fact, we say it every day in davening. Hashem oz la'amo yitain. Hashem is giving his strength to his nation. Hashem yivarech asami b'shalom. Hashem is blessing his nation with peace. The whole concept of Torah, the Medrash says, is to make peace b'pamal yoshel maila and pamal yoshel mata, in the realm of spirituality and in the realm of physicality. This is the whole purpose of Matan Torah. This is the whole purpose of a Karbon Shlomim. The concept of Shlomim is God eats, the people eat, they're both doing the same thing that causes a unity, so to speak, between the spiritual and the physical. Which there is no greater opposite than spiritual and physical. We learned many times, fire and water are opposites, but they're both physical. They have something in common, they're both physical. To unite spiritual and physical is the impossibility without the power of Hashem. So the whole concept of Karban Shlomim is to make peace between heaven and earth. And that's why it was such a feast, as it's called a feast, because it was actually a joyous occasion when you're able to make peace between God and world. And that explains why, as we learned in the past a long time ago, the whole concept of Torah is three. If you look in Parshas Yisrael, B'chedesh HaShlishi was the third month. The Gemara says in Shabbos, B'rich Rachmana, blessed is Hashem, the Yoiv Orient Tlisoin, La'am Tlisoi, Ayidei Tlisoi, B'yoyim Tlisoi. Meaning, the Gemara says, blessed is Hashem, who gave a threefold Torah, Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim, to a threefold nation, Kayanim Levi'im and Yisraelim, which are three, to a third person, Moshe Rabbeinu was a third child, because Miriam, Aaron, and Moshe, Moshe was the third child, on the third day of preparation, the whole emphasis in the third month. When did God give the Torah? In the third month, Sivan, Nisan, Ir, Sivan. Why did God give the Torah Dafkin? And that is interesting. Rabbeinu Gershon on the side of the Gemara says a lot more things of three. He says like 10 more things which are three. Moshe was a Levi. So he says, Levi has three letters. Moshe has three letters. A whole bunch of threes. He was a third son from, Levi was a third son from Yaakov. I mean, there's a lot of threes that the Rishonim and the Gemara explain when the Gemara speaks about the number three. What's this number three? What's so special about three? So we also say this in Davening, from the Braise. Shnei chsuvim ha-machishim ze'ezeh. Two psukim contradict one another. At sheyav ha-kosev ha-shlishi, until the third sentence comes, the achriya b'neim, and makes the hachra, he mediates between the two. Because what's the whole union of three? Three symbolizes mediation. You have one, there's nobody to fight with. Two is automatically a fight. Three makes peace between one and two.
Hashem said Kitov on the third day of creation.
Yeah. I mean, there's all the three things. I'm telling you, they enumerate many, many things of three. Three is a very unique number because three symbolizes peace. If you're the only person in the world, you can't say you're at peace. Only, you know, they tell the story about the Jew, two shuls, he's the only Jew on the island, there are two shuls. So he says, why do you need two shuls? He says, when I got to fight this shul, I go to this shul. But he was the only guy on the island, you know. But normally, if you're alone, there's no fighting. Two is automatically different. That's what about to say. It says the whole concept of marriage, of man and woman, if you don't bring the third partner in Hashem, then there can't be peace. Because two, man and woman, one's from Venus, one's from Mars, one's from here, one's from there. I mean, completely different. You bring the third one in, God, into the marriage, a shutef, so then you make the peace between one and two. And this is, the Mefarshim explained, this is what the Karban Shlomo was all about. The Karban Shlomo was the peace between the Mizbeach and the person, because he got and he got. Everybody was happy. Okay. Now, the Mefarshim just bring down, from the Unklus learns, he translates Zvachim over here simply Shechting, Shechita, not feast. He says, what does the term mean, Zavach Shlomim? Why does the Torah use the expression Shechting, slaughtering the Shlomim? He says, because at the time you slaughter the animal, you need to have in mind what the carbon is. He says, if you're doing an ola, at the time of the slaughtering, you need to know this is going to be a carbon ola, burnt offering. If it's a shlomim, the Gemara says, in zavach shlomim, why does the Torah use the word zavach? To teach you when you slaughter it, it has to be dafka for the sake of. Okay. By the way, you know, it's a very interesting thing. Shalom, the Gemara says, is the name of Hashem. It's very interesting. Why do you say Shalom Aleichem? If you look at the book of Rus, when Boaz came to the Kotzim, he didn't say Shalom Aleichem. If you look in the passage, it says Hashem Aleichem. God's name, Hashem Aleichem. May God be with you. What peace be on? What do you mean? You say hi. What do you mean, Shalom Aleichem? In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Jews didn't say Shalom Aleichem. They said Hashem Aleichem. May God be with you. Afterwards, when the generations became lower, the Chazal instituted, we don't want people just going around saying Hashem's name. So we say Shalom Aleichem. It literally means peace be on you. But Shalom, the Gemara says, is Shmei Shal Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's why there's a halacha that in a bathroom, in a mikveh, a lot of people don't notice. They walk in the mikveh, oh, Shalom Aleichem. It says in a mikveh, in a bathroom, you're not allowed to say Shalom Aleichem. Because Shalom is the name of God. In fact, there's tshuvas, the Meshach Feinstein has a tshuva, other people have a tshuva. If a guy's name is Shalom, that's his name. Are you allowed to call him in the bathroom? No, it's disgusting.
Yeah, the answer is no.
No, the answer is yes, because over there you mean the person, you don't mean God. When you say Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem means may God be with you. And that's saying Hashem's name in the bathroom or in the mikveh, you're not allowed to. But when you call a guy Shalom, that's his name. You're not calling God. You're saying this is your name. Because Shalom is a concept of completeness. Shalem means completeness. And Shalom, which means peace. And by the way, when are you complete? When there's peace. When there's peace, that's when there's completeness.
And there's three letters, Shalom.
No, there's a vav in there. But Shalem is the word Shalom itself has a vav, but okay, so the pasuk says like this. What?
You say Shalom, just Shalom. Then you see somebody in the mikveh.
You shouldn't say it, because of then you're referring to God's name. And that shouldn't be. But if anything, you could say Aleichem. You can't say Shalom. Shalom means God's name. One of the names of Hashem is Shalom.
So give him a different option. Hi.
Say hi, okay. But
the problem is ask him how they doing, right? How you doing? Is this Baruch Hashem? That's a problem.
You can't say Baruch Hashem either. But Baruch Hashem, he's saying Hashem, which means the name. Still, you don't say Baruch Hashem. You could say BH. You could say whatever, you know.
Who's Jonathan?
Well, but you can't say Baruch Hashem in a mikveh. In fact, there was a time, I mentioned this, there was a lot of these, like Williamsburg type Jews, they wanted to petition the American government to take off from the dollar bills and the coins saying, God we trust. Right? So let's say, how do you go into a bathroom with money in God we trust? Can you imagine if everybody had to put out their money outside the bathroom and go to the bathroom and come back, what they'd find? No, but there's a whole petition about it. Okay, so the pasuk says like this. If you're bringing the Zevach Shlamim, or when you bring the Zevach Shlamim, so im in abakim makriv, if you bring it from cattle, because you have options over here. And it's just to learn, there's more options by the Shlamim than by all the other korbanos. And here the option is like this. Im min habakor makiv, if you're bringing it from the cattle, then zachor, im zachor im nekeva, whether it's male or female, tamim yakrivenu lefnei Hashem, they need to be brought complete whole. Now, but the carbon oila, before at the beginning of Ayikur, we learned there had to be zachor tamim yakrivenu. It had to be a male animal. Here, because it's shlamim, the Torah says it could be zachor or nekeva.
But why male? Why is that for the male?
Because male represents nothing personal to the only woman here, but male represents the stronger gender.
But the female animal is more expensive.
I don't know if it was. But he brings down an interesting explanation from Shamshon Rafal Hirsch. Why by Shlomim can you bring Zachar or Nekeva? If by Oil you have to bring Zachar, so over here it should also be Zachar. He said an interesting thing. He says, the lack of gender restriction helps clarify the reason for which one may elect to bring a peace offering. Somebody feels himself like he's strong and independent, so he wants to thank God that he's such strong, macho guy. So bring a carbon zachar, male. Someone in a state of dependence on other people, symbolized by the female. But you know, not everybody wants to be leaders. Some people want to be followers. You know, not everybody wants to be a boss. Some people want to be workers. Not everybody wants to be leaders. Some people, like, you know. So here, the Karban Shlamim, you're allowed to be comfortable, whatever reason you want to bring the thanks to Hashem. I mean, what do you bring a Karban Shlamim? It's not obligatory, it's not a chiyuv. You want to stam, you're in a good mood to thank Hashem for something, whatever. So he says whether you have the masculine gene, or you have the feminine gene, whatever reason you want to bring a thanksgiving to Hashem for what you have, the Torah says, you know, there's no restriction.
Would men only bring, or could women bring?
No, women were allowed to bring korbanos.
And what about, would you have male and female animals being offered together? Or
you mean they needed a mechitza between the animals? No.
Consecutive.
Why not?
Females
and no problem.
So they were held in pens where to bring?
No, the guy brought the carbon to the Beis Hamikdash, they checked it and they brought it.
So, but they
there were no pens.
Well, I mean, let's say they got a whole bunch of people bringing shlamim.
So everybody held their animal until they were ready to... What do you do by kaparis? You stand in line with your chicken until the sheikh is ready.
Goyim too broad,
right? Goyim were allowed to bring a carbon.
Shlamim?
Yeah.
Like the story of...
Kamsa by Kamsa. They're allowed to bring korbanos.
Is that only animal or also bring bird?
Bird also. They
could be non-animal?
Oh, you ask the shlamim or goyim? Here the Torah only discusses there is bakar, tzon, eiz, and I think that's it. I think that's it, because that's all the Torah discusses.
What's bakar,
tzon, eiz?
Lamb, cow?
Bakar is cattle, tzon is sheep, and eiz are goats. Okay, so now the Torah says like this. Tommy Makriven, but one thing for sure, it had to be without blemishes. Because you can't have a blemish on an animal, because then it's not a kosher carbon. And the reason for that is, it's pashut disrespectful to bring a blemished animal to Hashem, because then it's not, you're showing you're giving used second-hand stuff, rather than, well, that was the whole Cain Hevel story. Right? Cain brought junk, and Hevel brought the good stuff, and therefore Hashem accepted Hevel, not Cain. You know?
Well, by the time that he was bringing the korban, he's the tamim, but before he had the defect.
And then it healed, then it's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All korbanim or only shalom?
All korbanis. It had to be whole at the time you brought it. If it healed, like, it was fine. But the Rambam enumerates, what I think it says, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was like 57 types of blemishes that animals had that disqualified it from a korban. In other words, if the eye, the lips, the bones, the Rambam goes through from the Gemara, of course, but the Rambam enumerates in the laws of Korbanos, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's 57 blemishes that an animal has that disqualifies it from being a whole animal, a complete animal, and therefore you can't bring it.
Internal organs.
External organs, yeah. Sometimes if they shecht and they checked inside and they found something wrong, they had to re-bring the carbon. Depending though, if a guy said, Harei Zu carbon or Harei Alai carbon. In other words, if a guy says, I have to bring a carbon, I donate a carbon to the Beis Hamikdash. And then he brings an animal, and along the way, the animal dies or gets a blemish. So you still have to bring another carbon. Right. But if a guy says, I want to bring this animal as a carbon, and then on the way the animal dies, so I'm not obligated to bring a different carbon. Because I said this carbon, this animal is not here anymore, I'm freed. But they had to check the animals and make sure there was no moon.
What if we presume, like everything else, do we not, that if Hashem is going to take the offering, that's the only way you get there. If he killed your animal or he somehow didn't allow you to get there, it was because he wasn't going to allow you to bring an offering.
You mean because he didn't want it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but sometimes he wants you to try again. It's like the Gemara says, well, what's the difference? You know, by Shechita, it has to be in the exact spot, yeah? And if you have to cut the majority of the food pipe and windpipe of the animal, you know? And if you cut a millimeter off, it's not a kosher carcass. It says, who cares? It's such a small amount. Who cares? Right? Who cares if I, you know? Hashem says, no, you either do it my way or the highway. You know, you either do it the way I want and it's a holy korban, and if not, it's worthless. And it's a very interesting lesson, by the way. You know, people say, who cares, Yiddishkeit, I'll do it a little bit like this, a little bit like that, who cares? The main thing is I'm doing it. Yeah? A guy says, okay, I'll eat matzah. I have to eat the mount. What's the big difference? I'm eating matzah. What's the big deal? You know, we mentioned this once, and I think it was in Mincha Maariv Learning. If an engineer will build a bridge, and there'll be a drop off, God forbid, the whole bridge will collapse with structural damage that can kill thousands of people. So somebody will say, big deal, I'm building a bridge. So I'll build like this, like this. I mean, it has to be exact measurements. What's the big deal? You know? The doctor doing surgery. So, I'll do it a little bit off. You know, you do it a little bit off, you're going to kill the guy. Yeah, you're doing, God forbid, what's the difficulty with brain surgery? Because you're dealing with such a delicate organ of the brain. A hundredth of a millimeter sometimes can make a difference if the guy's alive or dead, paralyzed or healthy. So guys, what's the difference? You're doing the brain, do the brain. What's the difference exactly? In important issues, exactness is what makes it work. So when it comes to Yiddishkeit, it's the same thing. Hashem says, you do it this way, it could become a korban that does nothing holier. Or it could be done in a way that you make a nevela and you make kochim, you chulim bazara. It could be a terrible aveda if you do it like that. And that's in all aspects of life. There is no such thing in Jewish life of who cares, I'm getting it more or less right. You can't get it more or less. Like I said, you can't do surgery more or less right, and you can't build a bridge more or less right. You either do it right, or sometimes it's better not to do it. Because if you do it wrong, at least you think you did it right. Sometimes that's worse. They're not doing it when you, at least you know where you're at. I didn't do it. But to do it and think I did it right when you didn't, that's worse. So that's what it has to be. Tamim has to be complete with all the every detail of the thing. The shachting had to be done. Every part of it had to be properly. Okay, so then the Pasuk Bei says, what does he do with the thing? V'samach yodeh aresh kabanei. He does smicha, he leans on the animal, and the Gemara says, when you lean on an animal, you have to do it with both hands, and you have to do full power. And you have to put your whole might on the leaning. But as the Mefarshim explained, that over here there's no confession. Before we learned, you have to confess the sins that you did. But if you, this is a shlamim, this is not for sins, you don't have to confess sins. What you do is you praise Hashem. Like the Rambam says, where do you do it? Pesach El Meid, at the entrance of the tent of the meeting in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, I'm sorry, but where do they do it? They shechted it, shechted Pesach El Meid, meaning anywhere in the El Meid, anywhere in the Azara. Unlike other Korbanos, had to be shechted, like we said before, in the north. This could be shechted anywhere. Yeah.
That's the courtyard outside?
No. In the Beis HaMikdash, there was the Ezras Noshim, the woman section,
right,
which was a big area actually. And then they had the Azara, which was a more inner section that the men went into. And then they had the Kodesh, where the, you know, the Mizbeach was in the, where the various...
You could see the Mizbeach from the...
You could see it, yeah.
So anybody could shech, but only Kohanim through the blood?
Right. In fact, look in this pasuk. It doesn't say a kohen shechted. You can check. Then it says, and for me, all these psukim before and later, the Gemara learns out, the Gemara's expression is shchita ksheira bizar. Bizar, a foreigner, meaning not a kohen, is allowed to do shchita.
Except once, right? How many guys are going to get it right? Aren't they out there to be
born? No, we're speaking of a guy knows how to shecht.
Yeah.
If he doesn't know how to shecht, he's not going to shecht.
Okay, and no women? Women never
shecht? Women didn't shecht.
There are exceptions, right? Like the Kohen Gadol that shechts.
Yeah, that's certain unique kabbonis.
No other one?
No. All the shechitas were allowed to be done by anybody.
How do you put your full weight on a little lamb?
No, it doesn't mean you put your whole body on it, your whole hand weight.
Press on.
Yeah.
Why is that called smicha and also a rabbi when he's ordained is called smicha? Where's the connection?
Because rabbis are animals, they put their
hands. No, really, I always had this question, I never got answered.
You always had this question, you never got answered? How could that be?
I don't know. He answered.
The smicha, the original biblical smicha, okay, what was called smicha ish mi pi ish, smicha man for man, actually, as it says in the Chumash, when Moshe Rabbeinu was told, take your Yeshua, to get him ready for the next leadership, Hashem says, you put your hands on his head. Okay? When Yeshua ordained the next group of people, he actually put his hand on their head, giving him that power to take over their job. Okay? The original smicha that it says in the Gemara, that doesn't exist today, by the way, that was in the time of the beginning of the Gemara, it still existed a little bit. There was smicha ish mi pi ish, man for man, meaning generation to generation that did the smicha. The process was they actually put their hands on their head. After that issue stopped, and by the way, smuchim only, they were called smuchim, that had the smicha, were allowed to make the new months before the calendars. They were only the ones that were able to do knas, fine, the monetary decision, then there were fine decisions, only they were able to do kenosis, knas, in Eretz Yisrael. After that process died, okay, and by the way, the Gemara says, or Rambam says, what David HaMelech, on one day, did thousands of people that he gave smicha to. It was like, but it was actually the spirit, like Hashem said to Moshe, put your spirit unto him. Why is it called smicha today? It's symbolic to what went on in the olden times. And the Paschim at the beginning of Chayshim Mishpat say, so what's the concept of smicha? Because bottom line is, if you know the halacha, you can rule. If you don't know the halacha, you can't rule even if you have smicha. It's like, so what is smicha? What does a piece of paper do? If you have smicha, you don't have smicha. If you know the halacha, you can rule it. If you don't know the halacha, even if you have smicha, you can't rule it. So what does it do? So they say that what is smicha today, that your Rebbe, like this, there's a din, that meira halacha b'fnei Rabbi chayiv misa. If a person rules a ruling in the presence of his Rebbe, he gets death. Smicha today means your Rebbe, who gives you smicha, allows you to make rulings even in his presence. Why is it called smicha? Because it's connected to the original... the original smicha that was taka, like they actually put their hand, but by Moshe Rabbeinu, by these people, by putting their hands on these tzaddikim, they actually bestowed upon them this divine spirit that they be, that they're the great ones that they are.
When you got smicha, did somebody put their hands on you?
No, they don't do. I told you they don't do that nowadays.
A good question, then trust me.
Other people put their hands on my head. Not my... Sometimes they give you a smack in the face, but that's not on the head, that's on the side of the face. They just smack. But, no, they don't do that to me.
Thank you,
I finally got it. No, I'm surprised that it's a very clear thing why it's called smicha. Because that's the way it used to be at the beginning.
But still, you still wouldn't rule in the presence of your Rebbe.
Correct, but the question is, how far out is the presence of the Rebbe? Of your Rebbe. In other words, it's not only in front of his face. it's in the area, you wouldn't be allowed to rule. In the
jurisdiction.
So, if you're 10 blocks away, and somebody asks you a shaila, so if you're not allowed to rule in the presence of your Rebbe, you're not allowed to rule then either. But if your Rebbe allows you to do it, then you do it.
What if the halacha that you can find in the book? Is it still the same?
If you know the halacha, you can rule it. Especially today where everything's printed. If you know the din, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you can say this is the halacha, even if you don't have smicha.
Inshallah, you're talking about is like for individuals that have, they all have their own, they have to be answered their own way. Not everybody can be answered the same way. Right?
If you know.
Everything is written in the book.
If you know what you're talking about, then and you know what it says in the books, you can say what it says in the books. Just because somebody has a piece of paper that says smicha on it, doesn't mean. You know, there were many years ago, they said there were many great rabbis that only gave smicha to certain type of students. And to other students, they wouldn't give it to them. And they said, why? They said because they knew these students, if they didn't know the answer, before they ruled, they would check into it and ask somebody and find out. So him, they didn't mind giving smicha to. But these guys, he was afraid, they would answer on their own, not knowing what they're talking about. So he said, I don't want to give them smicha, because then they're going to hack a Chinik, and they're not going to know what they're talking about. They answer anyway. And you know, these people, they would, if they don't know, they're religious, so they fear God. So they'd find out before they make a ruling for somebody else. That's the bottom line. Okay, let's just finish up this pasuk. The Zarku b'nei Aaron Kainim is Adam al Mizbeach Saviv, and the Kainim sprinkled the blood on the Mizbeach all around it. Okay, what it means, what does it mean around? Like we learned before, it doesn't mean you sprinkle blood all around. You take the northeast corner and the southwest corner. Right? And when there's a corner, you sprinkle the blood on the corner that it squirts on both sides. So let's say you do the northeast corner, let's say. So then you cover north and east. Then when you spritz it on the southwest corner, you cover south and west. So you have the whole Mizbeach surrounded by the squirting of the blood that you did on that corner.